It
you
is not
are blasphemy.
You got a different book than I do, then.
I'm looking at your same Revised Standard Version.
Well, then read the punctuation.
I'm reading the punctuation.
You are blaspheming because I said I am the Son of God.
I said I am the Son of God.
And it's still quotation.
Bob, you don't read this clear. It's clear as crystal.
Ernie, what is this?
Oh, you read it. You can read English.
Is this?
Would you use the microphone?
Is this a quotation mark? I'll use the Urim and Thummim
here. Whatever you do, be objective now, because it's a big point.
Is that quotation mark the same as the one that follows in the next sentence?
Just a moment. I am the Son of God.
Would you read the context, Ernie?
Now, where do I start?
Would you start reading the context?
You are blaspheming.
Okay. Would you read the context of the passage so we get an honest
presentation? Where shall I start? Reverend Martin, relax, please.
Well, no, wait a minute. I have two directions here.
You are blaspheming.
Quote. Begin at 31. That's the context.
Well, that's a long way up.
What's the context? You can't drop the context out.
Let me give full context. It begins Matthew chapter 1,
come
verse
on,
1.
Come on, come on. Read the context of the passage. I know you're not a theologian, but at least read English.
Well, sometimes I find that is...
We'll work at it. I mean, make the supreme sacrifice. Get it out.
All right, this is... Be patient, everyone, because the gentleman wants the context.
Right.
Let's see. 1, 2, 3 pages? No. The Jews took up stones again to stone him. Jesus answered them, quote, I have shown you many good works from the Father. For which of these do you stone me? Unquote. The Jews answered him, quote, we stone you for no good work, but for blasphemy, because you, being a man, make yourself God. Unquote.
Interesting.
Jesus answered them, quote, is it not written in your law... Another quote. How do I put that?
I have a comma after it.
No, wait a moment. Let me try this. Jesus answered them, is it not written in your law? And then he is quoting the law, quoting a quote, in other words. I said, you are gods. Close that quote. If he called them gods to whom the word of God came, and scripture cannot be broken, do you say of him whom the Father consecrated and sent into the world, quote again, you are blaspheming, unquote, because I said, quote, I am the Son of God, unquote. This is very difficult because we're carrying quotes within quotes.
Yeah, now would you mind answering me just one question?
Yes.
Without any further debate on the subject? The statement which says, do you say of him, this is Jesus speaking, whom the Father consecrated and sent into the world, you are blaspheming. That quotation, you are blaspheming, came from the Jews. There's no doubt about it.
That's right.
Accused him of blasphemy.
That's right.
Now, the reason they accused him, because, now it's not the Jews talking,
because
I said,
quote,
I am the Son of God.
Yes.
Bob, what could be clearer? He claimed it. Now, be honest and own up to it.
He didn't say he was the Son of God.
I just said the Son of God.
I don't see it that way.
Stuart, please.
I don't say it that way.
Will, please.
Be honest and admit it says that Jesus said, I said, not the Jews.
Now, wait a moment.
But this
isn't
in the context that all men are sons of God.
Look, stop interpreting.
82nd Psalm.
Stop interpreting.
I just did.
Read.
He related, Walter, he related this to the 82nd Psalm.
In which it is stated, you are sons of God. Just a moment. There is not one biblical commentator, liberal or conservative, who takes your position. And I have every single one of them in my library.
All of them?
All of them.
Every single commentator?
Every single one.
Boy.
Now, if you want proof of it.
You have a tremendous
library. 10,000 volumes.
Tremendous library and a tremendous understanding of every man's mind.
I read every one of them. Did you?
No, I didn't.
Well, I'm ahead of you then. I read 26 of them and you didn't read any.
Not necessarily.
That's all there are, just 26.
Well, then what one did you read that agrees with you? Give me one.
Clarence Craig, for one, whom you don't like.
Clarence Craig wrote that Jesus didn't say this? I don't believe you. I'm sorry. I happen to have a library far more
Jesus
extensive than this.
Oh, Jesus said this, but in context. In the context of what is here.
Don't give me context. I taught hermeneutics for 5 years.
I don't care what you taught.
I know
that
you don't.
Really
That's
matter.
The whole point. You won't listen
you
to anybody
that
knows
either.
Anything.
And you, you,
you
won't.
Just go spouting off about stuff you don't know anything about.
You don't care either, Walter. All you want to do is prove a point.
I'm proving the point that Jesus Christ claimed to be the Son of God, and you're looking right at the text and saying it doesn't say that.
No, you don't. No, he's right. Claimed. But no evidence.
The Son of God.
That's right. But no evidence
to
support it.
Well, John, at least you as an agnostic or an atheist can see from the language that Jesus made claim.
Wait, just a moment, Bob. Let me talk.
I'll turn right now and take my neck.
Bob.
One question.
I'll stick my neck.
One question, then
I'll stick my neck out.
One question.
Will.
No, don't.
You're a newspaper man.
Forget Will.
You're a newspaper man.
He's does it or does it not? I don't care what it says. Does it or does it not say that Jesus said it?
The statement that you are saying he said, but the statement that you said he said earlier is not the same thing.
I'm not arguing that.
You said he said he was God.
Wait a minute.
He says, I am the Son of God. They are not the same thing.
Wait a moment. May I bring this point out? I'm only asking you to decide one issue. The one issue is, did Jesus or did he not say, I am the Son of God?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Schrock. There is an impartial observation. That's all I'm trying to prove.
Gentlemen, let's interrupt for a moment to take care of some business. Now back with our guests of the morning, and we are talking this morning with Ernest Partridge, a lecturer in philosophy at Hunter College and Brooklyn College. And we have the Reverend Walter Martin, author of the book The Kingdom of the Cults, and the Reverend Robert Schrock, Methodist minister, Stuart Robb, and
I have a name.
I can't think of Will Osler. All right, you've been nice.
I have 2 points I'd like to make, Reverend, and one is I would like to read the next 2 verses. This is the King James Version where you were reading the revised. But the last 2 verses that follow...
What chapter is this, Will?
This is the same one we were on, John 10.
John 10, all right.
Verses 37. This is what it says immediately after he said, because I said, I am the Son of God, which is not the same thing as saying, he is God.
I'll prove that in a few minutes.
Oh, well, I'm sure you will. But
it's in your book, and it's been proved.
What I would like to read you is a simple logic of the next couple of verses, because he says, if I do not the works of my Father, believe me not. But if I do, though ye believe not me, believe the works. Then ye may know and believe that the Father is in me, and I in him. Now, in my belief, the Father is in all of us, and we in him.
Right, but the difference is that Jesus knew it. That's why he was able to heal the sick.
And Jesus knew it to an extent far beyond us. But I would like to go back, Reverend, because one of the things that bothers me about you and where you and I differ is that you have placed all your great spiritual force and belief in the words, in the commas and the quotations. And I quite agree with you that you know them well. Unfortunately, I don't think that this is the living spirit, because the meanings of words change, and as the meanings change, as the times change, as our understandings change, the words themselves either have to be revised in our own thinking, or they will die because they will have no more relevancy to the world in which we live.
But God doesn't change.
No, God doesn't change, but our ideas and our understanding has to change to stay alive. Now, Reverend, I made a very simple statement about the virgin birth, which had to do with the question of the normal birth of children, which I decided was not sinful. I think the whole doctrine of this kind of thing being sinful is silly.
Oh, I agree with you.
And if I had to accept that as being the doctrine of Christ, I wouldn't accept the doctrine.
I agree with you.
So this is the point that I was trying to make and that I think is most significant. Bishop Pike, we began this by your saying that Bishop Pike was not a Christian.
By his own theology.
I wish to say that the theology has nothing whatsoever to do with it. Jesus was not a theologian. He was a great human being who loved. And he said the Sabbath was made for man, not the other way around.
But he said he was the Son of God. That makes him different than us.
It makes him different in the fact that I think he was the closest human being to perfection that I personally have read of or know.
But that's not the church's position.
I don't care about the church's
position.
I'm just talking about what I think is the Christian position. Now, the Christian position has many beliefs. Your church is as much a cult as a Christian Scientist or any other, if we're going to call them cults. Going to call them cults, I just don't think it's right to call them cults. Do you believe the same thing as the Christian Scientist?
Do I?
Yes.
No.
And how do you know which one is right?
Because
do you believe the same thing as the Roman Catholic?
You asked me a question.
Yeah, well, you
said
no. You said no.
No, you didn't ask me a chance to answer it.
Well, no, but let's go to another one. Do you believe the same thing
as the question.
Rhetorical.
Do you believe the same thing as the Roman Catholics?
In some areas, yes.
No, I said no. In all areas?
No.
Well, so now, are they wrong?
Now look, Will.
How are we going to know which one is right or which one is wrong?
By one important factor. If we go back in the history of the church to the basic theological structure of Christianity, there is an irreducible minimum of theology to which the Roman Church, the Orthodox Protestant Church, the Eastern Orthodox Church, and all the rest have subscribed. This is known in theological circles and historical theology as the Christian doctrines or church dogmatics throughout the ages. This is the biblical position which the church has always maintained. Now, if you let me finish this one point, I am not enunciating, as Mr. Partridge seems to keep needling me, Walter Martin's interpretation of church history. I would be very happy to prove, if I had 5 minutes to do so, that in Roman Catholic theology, Eastern Orthodox theology, in all of the historic theology of the church, we are in consistent agreement on the Trinity, the deity of Christ, his virgin birth.
No, the Unitarians disagree
with
you.
May I finish? Yeah, the Unitarians are a cult that came into existence in the 17th century.
No, the Unitarians happen to disagree with you, so you are not in agreement, so you
Will,
kick them out of...
Will, would you let me finish, please?
Yeah, but
let me finish. Let me finish. Historical theology does not include Unitarianism, and Unitarianism was rejected by the Christian church through the ages as heretical. Now, there is a body of doctrine which is accepted as Christian theology. The Trinity, the deity of Christ, his virgin birth, his death for our sins, his bodily resurrection, his second coming. This is accepted by the church in all the creeds of Christendom, in all of the theological books through the ages, and I could give you 50 of them from
well,
memory
me
if you wanted
you
to check them.
I know a perfectly good Baptist, my friend, a man who is a Baptist clergyman with whom I talked only the other night, and who told me he did not accept any of these things. I said, do you consider the sacraments to be sacred? Do you think that there is any special miraculous quality in the communion? He said, no, not at all. They are simply symbols, and they are fine symbols. Mm-hmm. But he said, in my church, he said, we are allowed a wide latitude.
Not to deny basic doctrine.
I can say that in my church we are too, and I'm going to tell you something. Your church and mine and the scientists and all of us...
What is your church?
...are changing. His is the Baptist church.
Baptist, yes.
...are changing, and their dogmas and their theatrics and all of that have been changing throughout... Now, listen to me, Reverend, wait before you...
I'm so worried.
You stay there throbbing with a word, but hold it. Your church and all churches are changing and have changed throughout history as science has forced them to, as psychology has forced them to, and they will continue to because they must be relevant to the emerging knowledge which mankind gains about himself. That God has to change, that man has to change, and that you have to change, and that your religion has to change. And Bishop Pike is only perhaps a little bit ahead of where all the Christian position will be in another 5, 10, 15 years.
Do you know, as a matter of historical fact, that the doctrines which Bishop Pike has enunciated publicly have been condemned consistently for almost 1,800 years? Just a minute.
The church
by the Christian church.
Galileo,
just a moment. Do you realize that the Christian church, the Roman Catholic church, the historic communions have condemned the positions which he held 1,000 years ago? This isn't new.
They put people to the torch for believing this.
This is the same old heresy dressed up in modern clothes and said to be a space-age theology.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we should have a pretty good history?
I'm inclined to agree that many of these ideas are old, but there's an old saying that nothing so powerful as an idea whose time has come, and I'm sure that the people who thought that the Earth was round before the time had come felt an uncommon amount of heat before finally the doctrine was set aside.
How about the people who put lightning rods on? That was condemned by a lot of the churches.
The Bible itself.
Depriving God of his mode of punishment.
The Bible itself is, Reverend, the Bible itself is pretty old, and in that same Bible it says that Jesus grew in favor with God, and you, Reverend, say that God doesn't change.
Right.
But Jesus changed.
No.
He grew in favor with God. At one place he couldn't heal. God can heal. In one town, Jesus could not heal.
Right.
He literally could not heal.
May I answer this point? The Bible teaches, and the Christian church has always taught, that Jesus Christ is both deity and humanity. That is the meaning of incarnation. May I finish? Incarnation is the union of the divine nature of God and the perfect human nature of man.
Right. Well, now, that's perfect.
Look,
that's
look, you don't let me finish.
Your terminology is wrong, that's all.
Now, look, don't tell me terminology because...
Yes, it's wrong.
It's not wrong because
that's
it's thoroughly...
That's expressed was 100% right, but you don't know how to express it.
It's thoroughly biblical, and it's fascinating that you can tell me how to express biblical theology when you're a cultist and don't believe it.
Oh,
I do believe it. I say, it says in the Bible that Jesus...
You are a disciple of Mary Baker Eddy.
That's right.
Who was
Jesus said, "Why
cultist.
Callest thou me good? There is none good but one. Only that is God."
What fascinates me is the way we pluck a text out of its context. Let's put them back in their context.
Put it back in its context.
Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and mm-hmm. favor with God and man.
Yes.
No one denies that in his human nature, Jesus Christ lived as the last Adam. He was a child of his times. He grew in the cultural setting of his own time. And he was at the same time, and this is the mystery of the whole thing, the fullness of deity in flesh. When he was asked when he would return to earth, he said, "I do not know. The angels do not know. Only my Father."
But God knows.
That
may I finish?
May I finish?
The mystery of the incarnation is that God became man. Now, the point that we were getting at with Bob before was a very viable point, and I wasn't permitted to finish it, and it's linked up with this. And that is the concept that Jesus called himself the Son of God, and we were told by Bob Schrock that John's gospel was influenced by Greek thought. Yet the great dean of New Testament Greek scholars, a liberal himself, Dr. Edgar J. Goodspeed, in his last volume, Matthew, Apostle and Evangelist, stated, and this is a reversal of his entire position throughout his lifetime, that the overwhelming evidence of textual criticism had led him to believe, along with most New Testament scholars, that Matthew wrote Matthew, Mark wrote Mark, Luke wrote Luke, John wrote John, and they were all written in the first century, exactly as the tradition of the church had maintained. To argue that John is not as valuable as Matthew, or to argue that because one thing is missing in Matthew and Luke that is present in John and vice versa, that therefore we're going to accept or reject it, is completely logically fallacious.
Question.
Because, now wait, I'll point it out to you. Pike says, and I'm sure you agree with him, that the virgin birth is rejected primarily, I'm quoting Look magazine, primarily by him, first of all, because it appears in Matthew's gospel and Luke's gospel, but not in Mark and not in John. So he says, Mark is the oldest gospel, therefore I reject the virgin birth of Christ. He gives it as a direct statement. Now let's follow the logic of that through. If he takes the oldest gospel and accepts it as the source material, then whatever things he finds in the other gospels that are not in Mark by the same line of reasoning, he must reject. But he doesn't reject them. He accepts them. Why? Because they agree with his theology and the virgin birth doesn't. The logic is fallacious.
Now you mentioned...
Isn't the logic of this completely true? Now, you know it philosophically, and so do I. Agree with me there, at least.
Well, I don't know if that's the grounds that...
How can he tell what's in Bishop Pike's mind
just
anyway?
A moment.
If he puts it on paper,
moment.
We can know.
All right, please. You mentioned about the separate testimonies of these Gospels. Would you explain a simple and very commonly mentioned fact? Why is it that these two separate, independent testimonies of the same truth give, for example, two separate and entirely different genealogies of Christ? I'm thinking of, was it Mark and John? Matthew is one, and Matthew and Luke. Why?
Yes, they're not
all
right.
Separate. They're just backwards.
Let's take the historic interpretation of this, which I think is perfectly valid. Matthew's gospel is the genealogy of Joseph, and it gives the lineage from David down through Joseph.
Why? Go right ahead. Yeah, go on.
Well, I'm quoting
Bishop
Pike
now.
Here, and I'm agreeing with him.
Why?
You're not disagreeing with the bishop?
No, I'm not disagreeing.
Good, then take my position
you
for
why. Why did Matthew and Luke choose Joseph?
May I bring the point out? The scripture tells us that Jesus was supposed, in the eyes of the people, mm-hmm. as was supposed, the son of Joseph. There's no doubt about
supposed
this.
Supposed in the eyes of
and
Matthew.
Give me a chance to finish this point. You asked about the genealogies, Mr. Partridge. I'm trying to answer the genealogies first.
Right.
The genealogy of Matthew, according to Bishop Pike, mm-hmm. and according to other liberal scholars, is Joseph's genealogy. I accept that. Right. We agree.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, these men were contemporaries, Matthew mm-hmm. and Luke.
Right.
They knew each other. Mm-hmm. They were together. No, they prayed. Yeah, now, this is true. This is true because Luke wrote the book of Acts, and everybody here who knows anything about biblical theology knows he did.
Okay.
All right. Then he chronicled, and Matthew and Luke were actual intimates of Christ, and they themselves were involved in the writing of the New Testament.
Why
now,
do you
carefully.
Say that?
Oh, wait a minute. Let me finish my point,
will you?
Yeah.
Matthew, therefore, would not be so stupid as to write down a genealogy which Luke would write down the opposite of, unless they had two different thoughts in mind. Matthew wrote Joseph's genealogy, and Luke wrote Mary's genealogy. Both are traced back to David,
right.
who is the Messiah.
Question.
Now, let me finish. If we assume, as the evidence indicates, that Matthew and Luke were contemporaries whom you say had access to the same sources...
Go on.
Don't you think they'd be stupid to put down two different genealogies drawing from the same source?
Now, this is very interesting.
Not only it's interesting, but it's logically irrefutable. You refute it logically. Go ahead.
I suggest, by the way, you go to some basic texts in logic to understand what logic is all about, but let's not get into that.
I taught it for 2 years.
Congratulations.
Wait, just a minute. Let's get this straightened out. I taught logic for 2 years. I have a master's degree in philosophy, just like you have, and I'm quite convinced that so far as the knowledge of the subject itself is concerned, you're not going to teach me any logic.
Just a minute. He tossed this one at me. Let me give it a try.
Go ahead. Take it.
This is very interesting.
Yeah.
First of all, there's the interesting point that we have the genealogy, is it in Luke? Of
Matthew and Luke, both.
Well, yes, I know. In Luke of Joseph, or is it Matthew of Joseph?
Joseph.
Well, you say one is of Mary, one is of Joseph. Which is the one of Joseph?
Matthew.
Matthew.
Okay. All right. The one in Matthew is the genealogy of Joseph. Now, this is strange because also we understand that Joseph is not the father of Christ.
Why is it strange?
Let me carry on. But you say this is done according to custom. Yet this is why it was given that way. Yet, on the other hand, it is given as the genealogy of Mary in Luke, and this is not, and this is a violation of the same custom that that directed them to...
Who told you it was a violation?
You did, just a moment ago.
I did not.
You said it was the custom to get to use the father's genealogy.
That. I did not.
No, he didn't. I said that.
I didn't say that. Don't put words in my mouth.
Now, is it general practice of yours, Reverend Martin, that if you find... something in the scripture which literally, as it is written, supports your point, this is scripture. If it doesn't literally do so, but by some stretch of the pictorial meaning or metaphorical meaning, this is supposed to give metaphorical significance. Or if it seems to contradict it, then do you come up with such a situation as, well, obviously they were not so stupid as to make write something which seems to embarrass my position?
That's not true. You misstated the entire point. You fellows stood here, and I've got it on tape to prove it. You fellows stood here and argued vigorously with me a couple of minutes ago on the fact of the genealogy of Joseph and the fact that it was traced back and the fact that these men had access to the same sources. You were fighting and dying for the same sources.
Wait
a minute, Schrock was, for this one point. Now when I turn the argument around ad hominem and tell you that two men who are drawing from the same source mm-hmm. were stupid enough to put down different genealogies, all of a sudden you don't want to talk about it.
Wait a minute. What are you talking about different genealogies?
They're different.
Except for the fact that they are in reverse order. Matthew reads, "And Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom Jesus was born." Luke reads, "Jesus, when he began his ministry, was about 30 years of age, being the son, as was supposed, of Joseph, the son of Heli, the son of Mophet," and so on. Right down.
Yes. Son of Levi. Yeah.
Certainly, because in Jewish custom,
Joseph on both sides.
In Jewish custom, it's a well-known fact that when you put... The two genealogies are different. Now, don't tell me they're not.
They're only in reverse order.
Well, let's take a look at those genealogies.
Here they are.
Good.
Right in line, and the names are the same right down the line. both of them together,
yeah,
except
start,
in reverse
yeah.
order.
They start with Abraham in one, and they start with...
except in reverse
right.
order.
That's right.
And the names all appear there right down the line.
Yes, they aren't two different genealogies at all, actually.
In that case, you're going to have to argue with Bishop Pike.
I thought you were. I thought you were an expert on this.
I am, and they're different genealogies. And Bishop Pike
are the
says
names
so?
The same?
No, not all of them.
Well in
you mean
in general, are they the same?
I don't think so. I think there's quite a vast scope of difference between these names.
May I take a look?
Surely, go ahead.
I think I.
The point is, biblical scholars are agreed, Bob.
The point
that the genealogies differ.
They. Perhaps in a few names, but they trace to Joseph in both ends. And the reason for it being is because Joseph was of the house of David, and the scriptures taught that the Messiah was to come from the house of David.
I'm very sorry, but they are the same to David. From David on, they diverge.
You bet they diverge.
And where do they end?
Never mind the ending. They diverge. They're different genealogies. Partridge can see that.
Where do they end? They end with
Matthew.
Joseph.
Now
look.
Wait a minute.
Go ahead, Ernest.
Do I turn the page?
Yeah.
On?
And Jacob begat Joseph, the husband of Mary. That's the last thing it says.
Math and father Jacob gave father Joseph, husband of Mary. Jesus was born.
They come to Joseph.
Yes, but
I don't care where they come to. They're different genealogies.
Yes, but
exactly.
They're different genealogies.
Thank you, Mr. Partridge.
Thank
exactly.
you.
Yeah,
but
thank
Reverend,
you.
They cannot trace back to Mary if they wind up with Joseph in both cases. Which
they can.
It seems to me, Reverend.
Just be simple and say it that way.
Why don't you talk it over with them?
It seems to me.
2,000 years later, you seem to know more about it than they do.
Just a minute. It seems to me.
Talking about angels dancing on the tips of
that depends on whether that depends on whether they're twisting or doing a square dance. It's an important fact.
You go ahead.
Now,
you know, we haven't got around to Reverend's book.
I know that's fascinating.
We'll get to it, though.
An hour and 20 minutes, and we haven't discussed his book at all.
Well, if you'll just give me a second, please. It seems to me that the only reason that we have for assuming that this is not an embarrassment to Reverend Martin's position is that the writers of the book couldn't have been that stupid. Frankly, I ask for a little bit more than this.
If they drew upon the same source as you argued with Schrock before, then they were stupid.
Pardon me, not Schrock. Now, that's being unfair.
Bob, let him call him Bob.
If you want to call him by his first name, fine, but you don't say Schrock. We don't
Reverend
say Martin
Bob.
To you, do we?
Yes, they do. I've got tapes on where you not only called me Martin repeatedly, but everybody else did, too, at high levels of voice.
No, look.
Yes,
we're coming
John.
To the Walter.
Yeah.
Walter.
Now it's Walter. Then
no,
it was Martin a couple of times.
Never.
You were very good.
Because I happen
when
to be
I was
polite.
Out with
because I happen to
and
be
he was cross-examining me, it was Martin every other sentence.
Because of my indoctrination to religion, naturally, I would...
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yes. I wonder now if we, if in all fairness to Reverend.
Incidentally,
Martin,
Bishop
just
Pike.
Just Wilbur will do fine. I mean,
Bishop
you know,
Pike, he really had a lot of respect for you.
Who's this?
Bishop Pike.
Bishop Pike, as I pointed out before, is so much in agreement with you.
Yes.
That,
that's why he said he had a lot of respect for me.
Respect
I'm sorry.
For you. You got it mixed up, not
I
me.
I get confused. You know what I mean? It's
you
just,
he has respect for, not me.
That's right. One of those things.
You know,
but
I,
you should never say Schrock.
All right.
No, because
Bob,
it's...
Reverend Bob.
Reverend Bob.
No, not even Reverend.
How about...
Because he isn't that great.
Mass Bob, will that do?
Call him Dr. Bob. No, John, I noticed parenthetically as you were listing these...
I don't know what that means, but that impresses me parenthetically.
You know, I mean, you started out with Schweitzer, then you put in...
Schrock.
Roberts. Schrock was at the end, you know.
That's right.
I assume that this is in descending order.
We didn't find out what you were
right.
until later on, see.
That's all right.
Well, truthfully, though, you see, you're in an unfair position tonight, Reverend Martin, because the simple reason, if you would have heard Bishop Pike, you know what I think you would do with it? I think you'd call up the publisher tonight and say, look, do me a favor, you know, cancel the whole thing.
John, you know what? John, you know what? The day you can get Pike on this program with me,
not Pike,
we'll have
please.
A jolly
Bishop
time.
Pike.
Oh, I don't consider him a bishop.
Bishop Jim.
He has renounced the Episcopal faith. He's no bishop.
He has
not. He has not. Here's an Episcopalian.
I'm sorry. He denied the Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed and the Episcopal Church Lex Communicatum on that basis. Wait and see. What do you mean?
Especially what can happen on the Long John Show.
You can excommunicate
Bishop Pike just blew the whole thing.
They will.
An hour and 25 minutes.
I can smell the fire now. Yeah.
You know what Bishop Pike said about it? If they want to drum me out of the Corps, that's their business.
Right.
This doesn't make him less a Christian.
No, he was never in the Corps. And the whole idea is silly.
Let me just say this to Reverend Martin.
You don't have to be Episcopalian to be a Christian.
Reverend Martin, really.
Bishop Neville, go right ahead.
This man... Bishop Pike was really a delight. I mean, naturally, I couldn't agree with him because of my religious training.
Oh, my back.
Ernest was speaking.
I tell you, there's one thing that's going to happen out of this. You know, the Methodists are going to end up in the revised version of the Kingdom of the Cults.
Incidentally, the Methodists have been wiped out.
Huh?
The Methodists have been wiped out in that seven-way deal. Did you read about it in the New York Times?
John, you've got it all wrong.
Did I really?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Well, you see, we're going to incorporate them all.
Oh, come on. Now, did you read the New York Times Sunday?
Yeah, but
about the seven-way deal?
Yeah, I know about this.
I don't like
I was just wondering what you're going to do for a buck.
What are they going
to
do?
John, I don't like
probably
that
have to go on the radio.
No, wait. If that sounds like a pejorative, the word deal, let me just say this. I happen to know...
They don't know what they're going to call it.
Irving Roosevelt, who owns... Palisades.
Yeah.
And they're just opening up for the season, and they'll need some extra help over there, so don't worry.
You think I could make it on the Grand Way there?
Yeah, I think you could make it. What did you want? Do you want to leave the room?
He's been speaking, and he's got a right to speak. I mean, I don't get much of a chance. We were supposed to be
talking about the book yet. You've been doing quite well, Reverend. You've been doing very well.
Thank you, Reverend.
You mean the Kingdom of the Cults?
I'd like to talk about it. Well,
marvelous. Let me...
You want to start it?
Yes, I would.
I thought you were going to finish your point. I'm willing to listen to you.
Hold it, fellas. Before you do, let me interrupt to take care of a little business.
All right, John.
Thank you very much. I want to tell you something. If there was ever a man that I met in about an hour and met and know something about the man, this man, Bishop Pike, he's really great.
Well, his theology and yours are almost identical.
No, I'm really not a good Episcopalian.
Neither is he.
Let me take a moment to talk about the New York School of Announcing and Speech. And here we are back again with our guests, and I would like to recommend a book that I think you should read. It's called The Kingdom of the Cults. It's an analysis of the major cult systems in the present Christian era, and it's by Reverend Walter R. Martin. Reverend Walter Martin is director of the Christian Research Institute in Wayne, New Jersey. He's a former professor of biblical studies and comparative religion. Professor Martin is the author of 8 books in these fields and is considered to be an authority on religions originating in the United States. And we have... Ernest Partridge with us tonight, lecturer in philosophy at Hunter College and Brooklyn College. Reverend Robert Schrock. Reverend Robert Schrock is a Methodist minister. He's with the Church of St. Paul and St. Andrews on West End Avenue and 86th Street. Will Ousler is with us tonight. Mr. Ousler is a writer. And we have Stuart Robb. Stuart Robb has so many credits, we won't bother giving them all now, but Stuart Robb is a Christian Scientist. Although he is not representing the church tonight, we have requested him to join us in case we get into a discussion where we might mention something about the late Mary Baker Eddy. Will?
I would like to go into your books on the following question. You have selected a number of cults that you say call cults, the Black Muslim cult, and you have talked about Mormonism and Christian Science you call a cult. Now let me ask you a question, and please, Reverend, so we could get along a little bit and I could get some answers, could you just give me short answers? How do you select the Christian Scientists as being, say, a cult, or the Mormons as being a cult? How do they differ? Let's not go into the fact that you say they differ from the Christian tradition. But let's agree that the Christian tradition differs from itself, and in each church has a different interpretation.
But not on basic theology.
Well, that's a point. In other words, you have taken four or five things in which you can find three or four of the churches in agreement.
No. I have taken the historical creeds of Christendom and the formulations of doctrine of these churches through the centuries as an irreducible minimum of doctrine which the church has always believed.
Okay,
then
let's take some of those. Now, how about the communion?
That's not a basic doctrine.
The communion is not a basic doctrine.
No.
It certainly is in the Roman Catholic Church.
It certainly is
in my church, the Episcopal Church. It's one of the two or three sacraments.
You can have differences of opinion on the sacrament, so-called sacrament of communion, or the Mass. In fact, the Roman Catholics have five specific positions of interpretation on transubstantiation within their own church.
Let me finish, will you?
You ask me a question, you say, give me an answer.
I'm so tired of going into what you consider to be sources. You have answered the question. You can have differences of opinion. Well, I'd like to ask you now, because I'd like to get down to some sense out of this, Robert, and so far it hasn't made much sense.
Oh, you know better than that, Will.
I guess you may be right.
Thank you.
No, the point is, Reverend, if you can have differences of opinion on a subject so vital as whether or not the wine is the body of Christ,
not
or is
vital.
Only symbolic of the body of Christ, to me, believing that a drop of wine on the altar is the living...
It's vital to the Catholic, isn't it?
Of Jesus. It certainly is. That is their position, and it is vital to them, and I have read it in their books over and over again.
May I bring this point out, please?
In Roman Catholic theology,
in Greek Orthodox theology, in the history of the Eastern Church, in all of the Protestant denominations, it is not necessary to hold one specific view of the sacrifice of Christ relative to communion in order to be saved. You may have various and sundry views outside the Roman Church and everything else. Therefore, it is not vital to salvation.
Salvation is one of these central concepts in Christendom, as you're talking about.
Salvation is a central... I've got to answer him.
No, you don't, because I was talking. Now, let me finish what I was saying before I can...
The answer, yes.
I can't go on. Then you can take it. You've had quite a bit.
On what criteria?
Too.
No, I haven't had enough, but go ahead.
Well, none of us get enough.
Shut up, fellas. We got plenty of time.
Yeah. I would just like to make this one statement, Reverend, that if we are going to dismiss such important things and subjects as this, and if this is the criteria by which you decide what to call, this seems to me to be such a private thing that the public should know it. You have decided the basis of the kingdom of the cults on an interpretation of religions on certain items which you think the basic churches agree upon, and the other churches, regardless of how close they may be to Christ, in every other way become, for you, a cult.
That's not true.
That's your own definition.
That's
of
not
it.
True.
In other
you
words,
quote my definition. I didn't say that.
Well, I'm sorry.
You are reading into what I said what you want
well,
me to say.
Well, then why is the Christian Science Church a cult?
I'm telling
opinion?
You why. Because, one, they deny the deity of Jesus Christ.
No,
two,
that is
they
not
deny
true.
The doctrine of the Trinity.
They don't deny
Will you
it.
Let
they
me finish?
No, but they don't do that. They simply
they
interpret it in different
no,
terms
they don't.
Than you.
No, they don't.
You
more
see, my
terms.
Friend, there are some of us who don't believe that either you or I are fit people to decide what God is or what he is like. And so they do believe that God, in his infinite wisdom, would look down upon this discussion and perhaps smile at our pretentiousness a bit and perhaps decide that maybe he can accept your interpretation and mine equally.
Shall we put it another way, Will? One man's gospel is another man's cult. Right?
I think that is very wisely said.
I would have to take this one position. If you'll permit me for one moment to become a logical positivist.
Watch out.
Well, you have your chance at the rug. I would like to get a definition of what we are talking about. Now, the Roman Catholic Church classifies the Christian Scientist as a non-Christian cult. They classify the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons as non-Christian cults. The Eastern Orthodox Church classifies them as cults. The Coptic Church classifies them as cults. All of the denominations of Christendom, including the National and the World Council of Churches, classify them as non-Christian sects or cults and refuse them membership on that basis. What you're trying to do is say, Walter Martin has done it. I haven't done it. Christendom has done it. And the Christian Century stated, we are the church They are the cults. So don't pin it on me.
I don't even know that you're correct. I know a lot about the National
the
Council
Christian,
of Churches.
Just a moment. The Christian.
Well, I worked with the National Council, and I have
the Christian
research
churches,
on
the Christian recently. Churches with which Walter Martin agrees in this case have branded them as cults.
No, all the Christian churches.
No. That you happen to agree with.
No,
now,
sir.
Many
all,
people,
exclusively.
Now, many people who consider themselves Christians, many religions which consider themselves Christian religions, have not so done. Who
the Archbishop of Canterbury has not classified Christian Science as a cult.
That's right.
Thank you, Bob. It is not true.
Tell me what I said.
But I want to say
true.
One thing to you.
Let him finish.
You say that many of the organizations that call themselves Christians have not branded these as cults, and this is not true.
Well, each of these cults, are most many of them.
Now,
at least,
you learn from somebody else who doesn't agree with me.
No, really.
Many of these cults themselves call themselves Christians.
Yes, that's
I can call myself
true.
A Buddhist, but I'm not.
Let me say this,
the mainstream of Christianity, as it is, as it comes through an organized religion, has determined these as being cults.
I want to hear that statement very clearly, Bob. Would you make it again so it's not me?
Yeah, the mainstream of Christianity,
mm-hmm.
and by this I mean if in nothing else, the sheer weight of numbers have determined that these various organizations, cults as Walter classifies them, and as they are classified by others.
Yeah, but let me point out one thing.
They do call them cults. They do call them cults.
All right.
Let's get back to you. It's not me, is it?
It's a fact.
I'm not determined whether it's you or not.
You did. You said I selected them.
Well, I think you did. I think you did.
I just told you I'm following with them.
No, I don't think there's any... I want to tell you this. No, I want to finish.
I want to
finish my sentence. I'm going to.
Yeah, I know.
Will... I am saying that there is no book around that I know of, including the Holy Bible, that sets up a hierarchy and says these are okay and these are out.
You don't know the Bible too well, then.
The Bible doesn't even mention the Baptists.
You don't know the Bible too well.
Hmm?
The Bible specifically states in at least five different places that Mary Baker Eddy's philosophy is anti-Christian.
I wonder if I may,
based on,
could you hold it just yes. I wonder if I may interrupt for a moment just to read a couple of telegrams. Your guests are comparable to the biblical tale of the Tower of Babel, Solomon Cowan. Here's one more. Bishop Pike and myself in full agreement. Off with the labels. One God. Your guest very pious and bigoted. He acts as he was there. Ruth Finkelstein. Do you have paper there? You want to make notes now?
No, that's perfectly all right.
Are you ready?
I just made a statement before that I want to reiterate so Stuart will be able to take off on it. I said that the Bible specifically repudiates as anti-Christian the basic philosophy of Mary Baker Eddy. Mm-hmm. I said it, and I will be willing to defend it.
Well, if you are willing to defend it, you should be willing to defend anything you have said about Christian Science in your book.
I will defend what I said in my writing.
Yes. Now, you said in your book that Mrs. Eddy purloined from Hegel by having in her possession and copying and making use of in a variety of ways, up to several hundred passages, I believe, the philosophy of Hegel as quoted by Francis Lieber in translation.
That's correct.
Yes. Now, who is your authority for the authenticity of the Lieber, so-called Lieber manuscript? Arthur E. Overbury, what did he write on Lieber?
I'll quote what I said on it.
I know, but what did Arthur...
May I write? May I quote? You asked me for an answer. I've got to give it to you. All right? According to the findings of Arthur E. Overbury, who is an authority on Dr. Lieber's writings...